This is the Poetry Foundation's Essential American Poets podcast. Essential American Poets is an online audio poetry collection. The poets in the collection were selected in 2006 by Donald Hall when he was poet laureate. Recordings of the poets he selected are available online at poetryfoundation.org and poetryarchive.org. In this edition of the podcast, we'll hear poems by Kenneth Koch. Kenneth Koch was born in Cincinnati, Ohio in 1925. He served as a rifleman during World War II for the U.S. Army in the Pacific. He subsequently earned a B.A. from Harvard in 1948, where he first met John Ashbery and Frank O'Hara. Together, these three poets and their friends and associates eventually became known as the New York School. Koch's poetry mixes modernist sensibilities with a playful enthusiasm. Stream-of-consciousness narration, humor, and satire are prominent features of his work. However, his satires are more than mere jokes, explains Roberta Burke. They have a serious purpose of literary and social criticism. Koch explored an assortment of emotions in his poetry. He refused to relinquish lightness or a sense of humor in an era seemingly dedicated to deep seriousness. During his career, Koch was called the funniest serious poet we have by David Layman in Newsweek. Koch received a Ph.D. in 1959 from Columbia University, where he would teach for 30 years. Koch also devoted his time to teaching poetry to the elderly in nursing homes and to children at P.S. 61, a New York City elementary school. His books, Rose, Where Did You Get That Red?, I Never Told Anybody, and Wishes, Lies, and Dreams, describe the writing workshops he conducted and include some of his students' poetry. In addition to his major collections, Koch also published two epic poems in the ottava rima style of Lord Byron, Co, or A Season on Earth, and The Duplications. His honors include a 1995 Bollingen Prize, Fulbright and Guggenheim Fellowships, and membership in the American Academy of Arts and Letters. He died in 2002 in New York City. The following poems were recorded at the Library of Congress in 1960.
On the Great Atlantic Railway. I set forth one misted white day of June beneath the Great Atlantic Railway and heard, "Honestly, you smite worlds of truth, but lose your own trains of thought like a pigeon. Did you once ride in Kenneth's machine?" Yes, I rode there, an old man in shorts, blind, who had lost his way in the filling station. Kenneth was kind. Did he fill your motionless ears with resonance and stain? No, he spoke not as a critic, but as a man. Tell me, what did he say? He said, "My eyes are the white sky, the gravel on the groundway, my sad lament." And yet he drives between the two. Exactly, Jane. And that is the modern idea of fittingness, to always in motion, lose nothing, although beneath the railway they move in threes and twos, completely ruined for themselves, like moving pictures. But how other? Formulalessness, to go from the sun into love's sweet disrepair. He would fondly express rain trees, which is not a poem, rain trees. Still, it is mysterious to have an engine that floats bouquets, and one day in the rear vision mirror of his car we vowed delight, the insufficiency of the silverware in the sunlight, the dreams he steals from and smiles, losing gain. Yet always beneath the railway unsyntactical beauty might leap up, that we might sing from smiles ravines, rose the reverse of everything, may be profaned or talked at like a hat. Oh, that was sweet and short, like the minuet of stars, which would permit us to seem our best friends by silver's eminent lights. For nature is so small, ends falsely rain, distending the time we did, behind our hope for bodywork, riding with Kenneth. Their voicing ceased, then started again, to complain that we are offered nothing when it starts to rain in the same way, though we are dying for the truth. The Brazier Factory. Is the governor falling from a great height? Arm in arm we fled the Brazier Factory. The motion boat stayed on the shore. I saw how round its bottom was as you walked into southern France. Upon the light hair of an arm, cigar bands lay. I kissed you then. Oh, is my bar the insect of your will? The water rose, but will the buffalo on the nickel yet be still? For how can windows hold out the light in your eyes? Darling, we fled the brassier factory in 48 states, arm in arm, when human beings hung on us, and you had been arrested by the cloths were used in making, and I said, the Goths know such delight. But still we fled away into a dinner atmosphere from all we knew and fall asleep this day. O maintenance men with cruel eyes, then arm in arm we fled the listless factory. The music changed your fingers' ends to pearl. I punched you, you foolish girl. For thanks to the metronome, we got out alive in the air where the sun filled us with cruelty. There's what to do except despair like pages and laugh like prawns about the sea. Oh, arm in arm, we fled the industry into an earth of banks and foolish tanks for what bare breasts might be. In Love With You. 1. Oh, what a physical effect it has on me to dive forever into the light blue sea of your acquaintance. Ah, but dearest friends, like forms are finished as life has ends. Still, it is beautiful when October is over and February is over to sit in the starch of my shirt and to dream of your sweet ways. As if the world were a taxi, you enter it, then reply to no one. Let's go 5 or 6 blocks. Isn't the blue stream that runs past you a translation from the Russian? Aren't my eyes bigger than love? Isn't this history, and aren't we a couple of ruins? Is Carthage Pompeii? Is the pillow the bed? Is the sun what glues our heads together? Oh, midnight, oh, midnight. Is love what we are? Or has happiness come to me in a private car that's so very small I'm amazed to see it there? 2. We walk through the park in the sun, and you say, there's a spider of shadow touching the bench when morning's begun. I love you. I love you, fame. I love you, raining sun. I love you, cigarettes. I love you, love. I love you, daggers. I love smiles, daggers, empiricism. 3. Inside the symposium of your sweetest looks, sunflower awning by the nurse-faced chrysanthemums, childhood again represents a summer spent sticking knives into porcelain raspberries when China's still a country. Oh, King Edward abdicated years later, that's exactly when. If you were 70,000 years old and I were a pill, I know I could cure your headache like playing baseball in drinking water, as baskets of towels sweetly touch the bathroom floor. Oh, benches of nothing appear and reappear, electricity. I'd love to be how you are, as if the world were new and the selves were blue, which we don when it's dawn until evening puts on the gray-hooded selves and the light-brown selves of water. Your tear-colored nail polish kisses me, and the lumberyard seems new as a calm on the sea, where, like pigeons, I feel so mutated, sad, so breezed, so revivified, and still so unabdicated, not like an edge of land coming over the sea. To you. I love you as a sheriff searches for a walnut that will solve a murder case unsolved for years, because the murderer left it in the snow beside a window through which he saw her head connecting with her shoulders by a neck and laid a red roof in her heart. For this we live 1,000 years. For this we love, and we live because we love. We are not inside a bottle, thank goodness. I love you as a kid searches for a goat. I am crazier than shirt tails in the wind when you're near, a wind that blows from the big blue sea, so shiny, so deep, and so unlike us. I think I am bicycling across an Africa of green and white fields, always to be near you, even in my heart when I'm awake, which swims, and also I believe that you are trustworthy as the sidewalk which leads me to the place where I again think of you, a new harmony of thoughts. I love you as the sunlight leads the prow of a ship which sails from Hartford to Miami, and I love you best at dawn, when even before I am awake, the sun receives me in the questions which you always pose. The History of Jazz. 1. The leaves of blue came drifting down. In the corner, Madeline Reierbacher was reading Lorna Doone. The Bayswater helped to implement the structuring of the garden hose. The envelope fell. Was it pink or was it red? Consult Lorna Doone. There, Voyager, you will find your answer. The Savant grape-aid stands. Remember Madeline Reierbacher. Madeline Reierbacher says, "If you are happy, there is no one to keep you from being happy. Don't let them." Madeline Reierbacher went into the racing car. The racing car was orange and red. Madeline Reierbacher drove to Beale Street. There Maddie doffed her garments to get into some more comfortable clothes. Jazz was already playing in Beale Street when Madeline Reierbacher arrived there. Madeline Reierbacher picked up the yellow horn and began to play. No one had ever heard anything comparable to the playing of Madeline Reierbacher. What a jazz musician! The pianist missed his beats because he was so excited. The drummer stared out the window in ecstasy at the yellow wooden trees. The orchestra played September in the Rain, Mugging, and I'm Full of Love. Madeline Reierbacher rolled up her sleeves. She picked up the horn. She played Blues in the Rain. It was the best jazz anyone had ever heard. It was mentioned in the newspapers. St. Louis. Madeline Reierbacher became a celebrity. She played with Pesky Summerton and Muggsy Pierce. Madeline cut numerous discs. Her best waxings are Alpha, Beta, and Gamma, and Wing Song. One day Madeline was riding on a donkey when she came to a yellow light. The yellow light did not change. Madeline kept hoping it would change to green or red. She said, "As long as you have confidence, you need be afraid of nothing." Madeline saw the red smokestacks. She looked at the thin trees, and she regarded the railroad tracks. The yellow light was unchanging. Madeline's donkey dropped dead from his mortal load. Madeline Reierbacher, when she fell to earth, picked up a blade of grass and began to play. "The blues!" cried the workmen of the vicinity, and they ran and came in great numbers to where Madeline Reierbacher was. They saw her standing in that simple field beside the railroad track, playing, and they saw that light changing to green and red, and they saw that donkey stand up and rise into the sky. And Madeline Reierbacher was like a clot of blue in the midst of the blue of all that sky. And the young farmers screamed in excitement, and the workmen dropped their heavy boards and stones in their excitement, and they cried, "Oh, Madeline Reierbacher, play us the lead flint blues once again." Oh, railroad stations, pennants, evenings, and lumber yards, when will you ever bring us such a beautiful soloist again? An argent strain shows on the reddish face of the sun. Madeline Reierbacher stands up and screams, "I am getting wet. You're all egotists." Her brain floats up into the lyric atmosphere of the sky. We must figure out a way to keep our best musicians with us. The finest we have always melt into the light blue sky. In the middle of a concert, sometimes they disappear like anvils. The music comes down to us with sweet white hands on our shoulders. We stare up in surprise, and we hear Madeline's best-known tune once again. If you ain't afraid of life, life can't be afraid for you. Madeline, come back and sing to us. 2. Dick looked up from his blackboard. Had he really written a history of the jazz age? He stared at his television set. The Technicolor jazz program was coming on. The program that day was devoted to pictures of Madeline Reierbacher playing her saxophone in the golden age of jazz. Dick looked at his blackboard. It was a mass of green and orange lines. Here and there a red chalk line interlaced with the others. He stared attentively at the program. It was a clear and blue-white day. Amos said, "The calibration is finished. Now there need be no more jazz." In his mountain home, old Lucas Dog laughed when he heard what Amos had said. He smilingly picked up his yellow horn to play, but all that came out of it was steam.
The Circus was recorded at the Library of Congress in 1976.
About 15 years ago or 16 years ago, I wrote a poem called The Circus, which is in my book, Thank You, which, you know the way poets sometimes really have in their minds an idea of what's the best poem they ever wrote. And I always thought The Circus was the best poem I ever wrote.
for a while. I don't anymore. I like this one just as much. And I was thinking about the time I wrote the poem, and it reminded me about a whole long time when I was married and lived in Paris, the time I wrote the poem. A lot of people's names are in this poem. Some of them are friends of mine, and others are probably be well known to you. The Circus. I remember when I wrote The Circus, I was living in Paris, or rather, we were living in Paris, Janice. Frank was alive. The Whitney Museum was still on 8th Street, or was it still something else? Fernand Léger lived in our building. Well, it wasn't really our building. It was the building we lived in, next to a Grand Guignol troupe who made a lot of noise. So that one day I yelled through a hole in the wall of our apartment. I don't know why there was a hole there. Shut up! And the voice came back to me saying something, I don't know what. Once I saw Léger walk out of the building, I think. Stanley Kunitz came to dinner. I wrote The Circus in 2 tries, the first getting most of the first stanza. That fall I also wrote an opera libretto called Louisa or Matilda. Jean-Claude came to dinner. He said, about cocktail sauce, it should be good on something, but not on these, oysters. By that time, I think I had already written The Circus. Part of the inspiration came while walking to the post office one night, and I wrote a big segment of The Circus when I came back, having been annoyed to have to go. I forget what I went there about. You were back in the apartment. What a dump. Actually, we liked it, I think. With your hair and your writing and the pans moving strummingly about the kitchen, and I wrote The Circus. It was a summer night. No, it was an autumn one. Summer when I remember it, but actually no, autumn. That black dusk toward the post office. And I wrote many other poems then, but The Circus was the best. Maybe not by far the best. Geography was also wonderful. And the Airplane Betty poems inspired by you, but The Circus was the best. Sometimes I feel I actually am the person who did this, who wrote that, including that poem, The Circus. But sometimes, on the other hand, I don't. There are so many factors engaging our attention. At every moment, the happiness of others, the health of those we know, and our own. And the millions upon millions of people we don't know, and their well-being to think about. So it seems strange I found time to write The Circus, and even spent 2 evenings on it, and that I have also the time to remember that I did it, and remember you and me then, and write this poem about it. At the beginning of the circus girls are rushing through the night in the circus wagons, and tulips and other flowers will be picked a long time from now. This poem wants to get off on its own someplace like a painting, not held to a depiction of composing the circus. Noel Lee was in Paris then, but usually out of it, in Germany or Denmark, giving a concert as part of an endless activity, which was either his career or his happiness or a combination of both or neither. I remember his dark eyes looking. He was nervous with me, perhaps because of our days at Harvard. It is understandable enough to be nervous with anybody. How softly and easily one feels one alone, love of one's friends, when one is commanding the time and space syndrome, if that's the right word, which I doubt. But together, how come one is so nervous? One is not always. But what was I then, and what am I now attempting to create, if create is the right word? Out of this combination of experience and aloneness, and who are you telling me it is or is not a poem, not you? Go back with me, though, to those nights I was writing The Circus. Do you like that poem? Have you read it? It is in my book, Thank You, which Grove just reprinted. I wonder how long I'm going to live and what the rest will be like. I mean the rest of my life. John Cage said to me the other night, "How old are you?" And I told him, 46. Since then, I've become 47. He said, "Oh, that's a great age. I remember." John Cage once told me he didn't charge much for his mushroom identification course at the New School because he didn't want to make a profit from nature. He was ahead of his time. I was behind my time. We were both in time. Brilliant. Go to the head of the class. And time is a river. It doesn't seem like a river to me. It seemed like an unformed plan. Days go by and still nothing is decided about what to do until you know it never will be. And then you say, time. But you really don't care much about it anymore. Time means something when you have the major part of yours ahead of you, as I did in Aix-en-Provence. That was 3 years before I wrote The Circus. That year I wrote Bricks and The Great Atlantic Railway. I felt time surround me like a blanket, endless and soft. I could go to sleep endlessly and wake up and still be in it. But I treasured secretly the part of me that was individually changing. Like Noah Lee, I was interested in my career. And still am. But now it is like a town I don't want to leave, not a tower I'm climbing, opposed by ferocious enemies. I never mentioned my friends in my poems at the time I wrote The Circus, although they meant almost more than anything to me. Of this now, for some time, I felt an attenuation, so I'm mentioning them. Maybe this will bring them back to me. Not them, perhaps, but what I felt about them. John Ashbery, Jane Freilicher, Larry Rivers, Frank O'Hara. Their names alone bring tears to my eyes, as seeing Polly did last night. It is beautiful at any time, but the paradox is leaving it in order to feel it. When you've come back, the sun has declined and the people are merrier, or else they've gone home altogether, and you are left alone. Well, you put up with that. Your sureness is like the sun while you have it, but when you don't, it lacks a black and icy night. I came home and wrote The Circus that night, Janice. I didn't come and speak to you and put my arm around you and ask you if you'd like to take a walk or go to the Cirque Medrano, though that's what I wrote poems about, and I'm writing about that now, and now I'm alone. And this is not as good a poem as The Circus, and I wonder if any good will come of either of them all the same. Thank you.
That was Kenneth Koch, recorded at the Library of Congress in 1960 and 1976, and used by permission of the Kenneth Koch Literary Estate. You have been listening to the Essential American Poets podcast, produced by the Poetry Foundation in collaboration with poetryarchive.org. To learn more about Kenneth Koch and other Essential American Poets, and to hear more poetry, go to poetryfoundation.org.